Monday night edition of the pod. A lot of news that has piled up here. We're going to get to that. And then something that Danny suggested doing that we didn't have time for last week is to talk about which players have the most money on the line this season in terms of just how the variability of their performance is going to affect how much they get. And I think you could look at that almost as the free agents who maybe have the most uncertainty in their performance. Although, of course, the market will and what position they play will help determine that as well. But let's get started with some news. Where would you like to begin?
I think we have to begin in LA. And there are a couple of elements here that are on the court and off the court stuff. I think we'll start briefly with the off the court elements. There is a series of reporting on, I believe that was Friday, about a meeting that occurred between Luke Walton and Magic Johnson, and Magic expressing frustration that the Lakers didn't run more of an offensive system. Some of you probably read, I went on a pretty sizable Twitter rant about it at the time. And the basic genesis of it was, when you have LeBron James, LeBron is the system. So I actually agree with part of it, that the Lakers, to me, in terms of if your goal is running a system, the Lakers don't necessarily do a ton of that. But that's because LeBron James is the system. And what works around him is very different than what works around other players. And that's what actually really concerned me about this, was that we have a pretty sizable sample now of the teams trying different things around LeBron James. He has changed teams now three times, and certain things work, certain things don't. And when you look at who the Lakers brought in after LeBron, it reminded me of the same thing, that basically what they envisioned, the guys they brought in, didn't seem like LeBron James players. Now, that might not be Magic and Blake's fault. We don't know that, because it could be LeBron said, I want to play with these guys. KCP seems like the most likely with that, considering the clutch thing. But that's the most of this doesn't really bother me too much. I mean, coaches and GMs talk about feelings, and Magic, with his experience and success as a player, has probably more pronounced of feelings on this than most general managers do. But the process elements of it are a little bit concerning to me, because they reflect on what I feel were the mistakes they made in later July than the 1st of July.
Yeah, certainly you would have to say that the roster was quite flawed, especially the lack of a backup center, which they've tried to address, at least in part. We'll get to that in a second. The lack of shooting, maybe too many guys who need the ball in their hands. We've discussed these ad nauseum. I completely disagree with Magic as far as the offensive system. Number one, the fact that they have run as much as they have is actually, that is a system. Getting players to take the ball out of the net and push it up as fast as you can. Getting guys to commit to running. Getting LeBron, who's generally played pretty slowly in his career, to run. That is a system. That is something that is difficult to do, to get players to play this way. You know, they are at the top of the league in offensive pace. We went through those numbers on the 15 and 60 last week about how they're playing so much faster than everyone else. And for a team that has a lot of athletic guys, a lot of finishers, a lot of guys who can get to the rim, as opposed to a lot of guys who can space the floor and provide room to work in the half court, running makes the absolute most sense. Then I also think they've done a really nice job of putting their playmakers, including LeBron, at the elbow, running screens for them, getting plays to the rim. I think Luke has done an amazing job to get as much as he has out of JaVale McGee, and actually they've defended reasonably well with McGee on the court. It's when he goes to the bench and they had no traditional center at all that things really plummeted defensively. So I think Luke Walton has actually done a fine job here. Now, I did not watch their debacle against the Raptors that closely last night, and I might change my opinion a little bit there. I mean, without Kawhi Leonard, to come out and just get smoked and trail by 30 points in the first quarter, that's incredibly discouraging. And I think we will find that good defensive teams are going to be able to stop these guys as well. I mean, they put up 10 points through 9 minutes in the game because they just don't have the spacing, and you can be kept out of transition, especially if you're scoring on them at the other end, or keep them out of transition, I should say. But I did think it was pretty hilarious, Magic's quote to the LA Times before the game, when that was the way they came out and started.
Yeah, it was. And then the other part of it, if that was the source of Magic's ire, I mean, their defense has been pretty awful.
Can we read the quote?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Magic says, I was trying to set you up for that, but I guess I failed.
I didn't have the quote in front of me.
Magic said that Luke could be safe for the rest of the season unless something drastic happens, which it won't. and then they come out not like an hour later and lay that egg. That was pretty funny.
Well, we can actually, before we get into the other bigger piece of news, just quickly, because I know we'll forget, Mo Wagner is now available. Unfortunately for Mo Wagner, he now is not going to play as much because the Lakers are going to sign Tyson Chandler as soon as he clears waivers, reporting from Woj and from Shams Charania about that. And Chandler is an LA native, and I'm really happy for him that he's going to get that opportunity and to get the chance to be on a competitive team after these years in the wilderness. You know, he's had those two stints with the Mavericks. But other than that, I mean, it's been some time since Tyson Chandler's been on really competitive teams, and maybe he hoped that Phoenix was going to be more than that. There were those ideas that he was signing, and they were opening the door for LaMarcus Aldridge, who ended up going to San Antonio. And I really like the way that Kevin Pelton put this on, I guess it's called ESPN Plus now, that Tyson Chandler isn't a useful player for them. And that is an important place to start with this. The Lakers have needed more of what big men can bring to the team, setting capable screens, protecting at the rim, rebounding. Getting those elements from a tall human being is a positive for the Lakers. But then the other part was that if they feel that Tyson Chandler is that guy for the rest of the year, meaning that they aren't going to make a subsequent change, then I think this might be a little bit of a problem, because while Tyson Chandler is talented, he isn't really a playoff guy to me at this point. And we have a reasonable expectation. You and I will probably do buyout guys much later in the process, but the expectation is not only will this be a strong buyout market, but this will be a very strong center-centric buyout market. So if we're comparing Tyson Chandler to, let's say, Robin Lopez, if they are using him as the reason to not get somebody like Robin Lopez should he get bought out, then that becomes a negative. So you get the positive of having Tyson Chandler starting, let's say, at the end of this week. But you have the downside of, when the games matter more, not having a superior player out available. And so I think this is a positive. And then the other thing to mention with the Lakers is, besides the whole him being a hometown guy and a veteran who is generally very popular in the locker rooms he has been in, so there might be some downside risk of cutting him, that the Lakers are kind of going to need to do this. So it is a very good short-term move. But there is this kind of, it's not long-term downside, it's more long-term opportunity cost.
I'll second all that. I also think there's a possibility he's just completely cooked at this point. I mean, really, if you look at his performance in Phoenix, you know, the only thing I think you can say he's doing well is rebounding. And they could definitely use some defensive rebounding, but, you know, and maybe he'll have a little bit of a renaissance. He was on bad teams, you know, blah, blah. But generally, when it comes to player performance, my philosophy is the simplest explanation of what I see on film is what I expect going forward. Instead of, oh, he'll be motivated now. It's like, all right, maybe. But the more likely explanation is what he put on film is what he is. And, you know, I think he's too slow to get out into the floor the way he used to. Also, you know, the game has really changed in terms of, you know, not being able to just drop back at the rim and pick and roll coverage. You know, I do think he can help them as a communicator defensively. You know, that's something that he's always excelled at. You know, he'll be a good force in the locker room. Although, again, you know, you say that, it's like, you know, Phoenix has had like some great locker room the last 3 years, like, so, you know, I always think that stuff is a little bit overrated. It's like, oh, when you end up being a good team and having a good locker room, it's like, wow, it's because we had these great vets. And, you know, when those guys come into a bad situation and it stays bad, you know, you never hear about it. So, not to say he's a bad locker room guy, it's just, again, you question the impact of like, oh, he's really going to change things so much. But yeah, I mean, he's slow. And then I think offensively, he's a big minus. You know, he's not JaVale McGee. Offensively, he really just can't get up those alley-oops anymore. He has zero touch around the rim. He is a solid screen setter, but, you know, they don't do a ton of pick and roll on this team. So I think he might be better than what they had. But, you know, it's possible to me that this is just not going to work at all. There's a reason he was available for what he was available for.
And that's why the opportunity cost thing is there, is if they realize that they need to cut bait, will they do it? And they very well might. It's an open question. So the other component of this is the Phoenix Suns part. And so Shams Charania has the information that Chandler's giving up $2.1 million of the $13.5 million that the Suns owe him. Not coincidentally, that's about the money that he will make as a Los Angeles Laker. And as Albert Nahmad pointed out really well, the timing on this is really unfortunate for Phoenix because of a few elements that they had to go through just a few weeks ago. So the Suns had to clear a roster spot, which meant that they ended up deciding to cut Devon Reed. So that was one. But then the second part is they had already squeezed out their cap cap space. That was that they had actually done it twice because they had to clear some cap space by doing the Jared Dudley, Darrell Arthur trade, and then that allowed them to get Rashawn Holmes, and then they were out again. And so then when they got DeAnthony Melton, they got the draft rights to DeAnthony Melton from the Houston Rockets in that trade. They had to sign him, but since they didn't have cap space, and then since they had been a cap team, they only had the room exception, they couldn't give him more than 2 years. So if they had gotten Chandler to give up that $2.1 million before the season started, they could have not only kept Reed, but they could have gotten Melton on a 3 or 4 year deal, assuming the sides could have come to an agreement.
Yeah, and subsequent reporting indicating that Chandler didn't take a buyout earlier because he just didn't have a team to go to, and now, of course, he has with the Lakers. We'll see. I mean, if Melton may break out at the end of the season, he's going to have some chances, probably, with Phoenix's point guard situation. And this will also mean that Rashawn Holmes now is going to get plenty of playing time for the Suns. Chandler also, I mean, worth noting, I looked at this last week, so maybe it changed a little bit in the subsequent games, but when they didn't have Ayton on the floor, I mean, Chandler had like a negative 27 net rating, which, you know, in part was due to the players around him and bad luck and small sample size and all that, but, you know, they had not been effective when he was on the floor. Holmes is a solid offensive center, at least, and he's not very good defensively. I'd say Ayton is probably actually better than him, frankly. So don't expect the Suns' defense to improve here with this move, but this makes sense because they invested a second round pick basically to take on Holmes. He hadn't been playing, and so now you can get a look at him. He does have that minimum cap hold for next year, so if they want to bring him back as the long-term backup for Ayton, he'll finally get a chance now to play regularly for the first time in a couple of years. He actually one of those rare players who played a lot more his first and second year than he did in his third year as Joel Embiid got healthy. Where do you want to go next here?
Let's go to Houston. The news coming out on Monday morning that Jeff Bezdelic is returning to the Houston Rockets. He will be their defensive coordinator and will take back over the reins full time after Thanksgiving. We don't know the exact timeline, and some of the reporting from Woj is that he was resolving some family issues involved with the move, and he has some other commitments that are preventing it from happening until around Thanksgiving. But seems like good news for the Rockets. It's always hard to attribute credit for success and failure to an individual coach, especially considering the personnel turnover, but having his voice there, especially considering Mike D'Antoni is pretty open about not prioritizing defense, seems like a very good thing for the Rockets, who have been simply awful defensively so far this year.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting some of the reporting that Tillman Fertitta was personally involved in trying to get him back. That to me would indicate that they are paying him a little more money than he would have been making before. Eric Gordon has missed two straight with an adductor or a groin issue. He's ruled out pretty early from the previous game, so I'm guessing this could linger another couple or few games at least. But James Harden is back, James Ennis is back. That has helped them a ton. They did get healthy with two road wins over Brooklyn and the Bulls over the weekend, at least to some degree here. Their rivals in Golden State, Sean Livingston, has now missed almost 2 weeks with a sore foot that he injured early in camp. Slater reported that he played in some old hyperdunks during the preseason and started having some issues after that. But the hope is that he can return at the end of the week. And then DeMarcus Cousins has been doing some light full court, like 4-on-4 scrimmaging, not particularly competitive stuff with like assistant coaches and whatnot. The grainy video at the Warriors practice facility, there's basically like an area along the baseline of one of the courts where you're sequestered as the media and not allowed to leave. That's why being on the road is so much better for a shoot around or a practice, because you can just walk around the whole gym. They don't have like a system where you're only allowed to go in one place and they bring all the people over to you. Instead, you can just go and talk to people on the road. But in any event, they're running this 4-on-4, and some of the video indicating that DeMarcus, you know, I'm sure he probably was getting a little winded as he was working up, but, you know, didn't look incredibly spry so far. But obviously it's very early on in his recovery.
Did you mention Eric Gordon? I might have missed it, because that's the other thing we should talk about with the Rockets. Okay, I missed that. Then we can jump on to the first actual time we've heard for Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah, it's been this weird nebulous thing that we didn't hear anything. And Woj, in a tweet that was mostly talking about Denver's success this year, he mentioned mentioned that Isaiah Thomas should join the bench unit sometime in December. It's good to have a timeline, you know, and it could definitely be worse than that. Monty Morris has done pretty well in Thomas's stead, but if he can be anything close to healthy Isaiah Thomas, that would be even better for the Denver Nuggets, who are going to need bench offense. You know, they're now that Wilson, not Wilson Chandler, he's gone. Now that Will Barton is in the starting lineup and currently out. So he could really, really help them. And I'm excited to see him play there eventually.
In Dallas, Devin Harris had been out since the first game of the season with the hamstring. He went through practice. It should be back the next couple of games, although whether he'll be in the rotation, it'd be interesting to see. They have a lot of guys who need to play already. And then Dirk, seems unlikely that he'll even be back this month. So really too bad for him that it's taken so long to get back from this ankle injury. And certainly the more time he misses, the more it would seem to augur that, you know, this will in fact be his last season. Memphis, who we're going to see tonight in person against Golden State. Omri Caspi had to exit with knee soreness after scoring 2 points against Phoenix. But man, what a 2 points it was.
Yeah, I mean, he pulled off a sham god on Josh Jackson that Durant apparently called vicious today, which is pretty good praise. And I can't remember who it was, talked to God Sham God, gave it a 4 out of 5, which is quite good for Omri Caspi. But yeah, knee soreness. And Chandler Parsons is also out with knee soreness still, which is certainly unfortunate, though they have a lot of options on the perimeter, which is something that we both praised about their offseason.
In Miami, James Johnson seemed like he was getting close. Maybe that was just incorrect or misleading, or I'm misremembering that, but he hasn't made his debut yet. It seemed like he'd been practicing and, you know, coming back from that hernia surgery. I mean, that is like, he had that surgery in May. Like, how is he not back yet? Like, I've never heard of that kind of a surgery taking so long. So, you know, that really worries me. And then Deion Waiters also, you know, still no indication that he's close coming off of that foot issue. We can return to Minnesota with General Soreness captaining the ship.
Well, not captaining on certain days, but Jimmy Butler, yeah, he didn't play as they got absolutely walloped by Portland. And yeah, I mean, that was just a rough game for them overall. And part of it was not having Jimmy Butler, but another part of it was their point guard situation, because Jeff Teague is still out with his knee issue and Derrick Rose did not play due to left ankle soreness. So when you don't have your best offensive wing and you don't have either of your two highest used, I'm not going to say, yeah, I mean, Rose has been better than Tyus Jones so far this year, it's going to be hard to score reliably. And they got absolutely waxed by Portland. And I mean, we're just going to have to see. We talked a lot about Jimmy Butler's play here back when he did it the first time, and we'll keep an eye on it. I mean, that's really all we can do at this point.
So basically he's like, is he just only playing in like high profile national games at this point? I mean, this soreness thing is obviously completely preposterous. I mean, they've played like three games in the last week and like haven't been practicing at all, I think. So
yeah, he's a special attraction, which is also unfortunate for Minnesota, because those are games that are probably against teams good enough that they might not beat them with him anyway. So like, yeah, he played against the Warriors and they were actually pretty close in a lot of that game, but then they ended up losing by, I think it was like 15 or 16. And yeah, so we'll see where that goes moving forward. We can jump to the team that whooped them in that game, the Portland Trailblazers. And don't come back early from knee surgery, kids, adults, whoever you are, don't come back early from knee surgery.
Yeah. And early, I mean, when it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like Harkless now has missed 5 straight, doesn't really seem to have any kind of a timetable. And this is one of those things, just the way it feels to me is, all right, he's going to try and rest. He's going to try and rehab it. But if it's been 5 straight, he's not seeing the improvement. You know, he was having soreness all through camp. I mean, remember, this is supposed to be, you know, a small arthroscopic procedure. And, you know, in theory, he was healthy by the playoffs, although they even shut him down again. I think he came back for, I can't remember if it was game 2 or game 3, and then he didn't play game 4 once it was clear that they're going to get swept. But man, this seems like it's heading in the direction of like another potential surgery if this doesn't resolve soon. You know, it's always worrisome when a guy just like has swelling for no real you know, diagnosable reason.
Another one that I want to keep an eye on, Luke Richard and Mbamute has missed the last 5 games due to knee soreness, and he is not expected to play in their Monday night game against the aforementioned Minnesota Timberwolves. They have enough depth, especially since Gallinari is still healthy. They have enough depth to survive it, but Mbamute is an important part of their defensive identity, and it'd be nice to see him around a little bit more. So they're certainly missing him, but probably not, well, definitely not as much as New Orleans is missing Elfrid Payton. right?
Yeah, Peyton, there wasn't an indication that this was going to be a real long-term injury for him, but he's missed almost 2 weeks now. That's perhaps been an underrated part, in addition to AD missing time and not quite being himself, of how they've gotten this five-game losing streak after starting 4-0. And he's hopefully going to be back within a week or so. In San Antonio, Rudy Gay, just something to monitor here. Hopefully nothing. Mike Reich indicated that Pop sort of alluded to the idea that this is more of a maintenance absence, but Gay did not play on Sunday as they got waxed by the Magic with right heel soreness, and right heel soreness did cause him to miss 25 games last year. And then Donovan Mitchell struggling with nagging injuries over the last week or so. He had to leave the game last week with hamstring tightness, and then he suffered a left ankle sprain, so he won't play tonight against the Raptors, which is really a shame. I was looking forward to that game. But, I mean, the Jazz, they're 0-4 at home, and they could be looking at 0-5, especially if Kawhi plays tonight.
Let's move to Atlanta. John Collins doesn't, I mean, he's still out for several more games, has not returned to practice. We talked yesterday in the 15 and 60 about how much they're missing him because they just do not have much of power forward. And while I firmly believe that John Collins is better as a 5 than a 4, they have nothing at the 4, so he would really, really help them there. And in Brooklyn, Damari Carroll he had surgery on October 16th, and we didn't really have a specific timetable, and he's getting close to a return. So that's definitely, I mean, it's good as long as they're not rushing him back. And then favorite of the podcast, Travion Graham is dealing with a hamstring issue. I believe they said he was going to be reevaluated in 2 months, and he's making progress, which when you consider that we're still early in that time frame, that's what you want, because Solomon Hill is a good example of just a nasty hamstring injury that basically keeps it out for most of a season. So fortunately, it looks for the Nets and for Graham like it's not going to be that kind of a hamstring issue.
Yeah, he's begun running already, which doesn't mean his return is imminent, but hopefully it won't end up being the 2 months. John Isaac, another recurrence perhaps of an injury from last year where he missed so much time with that sprained right ankle. He's going to miss his second straight now with another right ankle injury. Supposedly said it wasn't as bad, but let's keep an eye on this one. And then Tim Hardaway had to leave New York's loss to the Wizards last night with a back injury. He said it felt like a nerve or something, which is not good. Hardaway has had a wonderful start to the season. And then Kevin Knox has been upgraded at least to doubtful for tonight for the Knicks against the Bulls. So he's not going to play, but you know, maybe he could be back in the next week or so. Fizdale said he's got to get through a full 5-on-5 practice, and they may have one of those on Tuesday. All right, we got to get to our picks for who has the most money on the line. But first, I want to tell you about Everlane, which those clothes came just in time for my honeymoon, which was awesome. You could check out my personalized collection at everlane.com/catspace and get free shipping on your first order. I really liked Everlane's summer stuff, which it's not summer right now, but maybe if you live in the Southern Hemisphere or you're going there, it could be helpful. But that's the stuff that I got because I was going on this honeymoon to Bali in Japan. And I just thought that their quality was excellent. It was stuff for summer that was like pretty thin and cool, but not, you know, cheap and like flimsy. I really like all of their t-shirts. I thought that their shorts fit really well also. And they really just have a lot of great essentials that are an important part of your wardrobe, but they use great materials, but they're not going to mark it up. They tell you their real costs because they want you to know what you're paying for and why. This transparency is really revolutionary in the clothing company. They'll tell you where they get their materials. They'll tell you about the ethical factories that they work with. And the prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers because they are selling directly to us. Once again, if you want to check out my personalized collection, go to everlane.com/capspace and get that free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/capspace. Easy to remember, /capspace, because we talk about it all the time in the program. Everlane.com/capspace. Let them know that /capspace that you came from us. All right. So the way I wanted to approach this is there seem to be really three categories of guys who can have a lot of money on the line. The first is the young guys trying to establish themselves. Generally, these are going to be restricted free agents who did not come to an agreement on an extension. And if you're a restricted free agent in particular, like, you got to play really well. And there's a lot of guys who come in their third season in the league, going to their fourth season in the league. If you're a lower round pick, maybe you're reaching free agency a little bit earlier, but they really have to. A lot of times you haven't established yourself as a starter level player. And that's why they didn't get an extension that paid them like a starter. But some of these guys have the ability to play at a starter level and prove that they are at that level this season.
They do. And something that I want to clarify before we really get going on this, in terms of most money on the line, the way that I thought about it is in terms of both dollars and years. Because in certain situations here, not necessarily with the young guys as much, because it's not as much of a risk to give a guy a restricted free agent a four-year deal, but that really matters. And then the other part that I want to mention at the beginning.
In some ways it is, because they haven't necessarily established that level of performance, right? You're in terms of injury and performance decline, there's not as much of a risk, but maybe they just never get to be the player. In some ways,
they weren't that good in the first place.
Yeah, in some ways, you're paying for expected improvement. And so if these guys can actually get to the point where, okay, I have actually established that level as a starter type of player, then that makes it a lot easier for teams to pay up.
Yeah, and then the other thing I want to mention, because we're talking about the peak of this, because a lot of the players that I had, my original list of like guys that have went through all the rosters, have a lot of money on the line, that was 40 guys. But then one of the big ways that I culled it was players that have a lot of real upside. Like if I don't see a meaningful chance that you can be like a $10 million a year plus player, you can certainly have a lot of money on the line, but you can't have as much as some of these other guys, just because the volatility is there. And so one guy I want to give a brief honorable mention to, but this is exactly why he didn't make my list, is Willie Cauley-Stein. Like, I think Willie Cauley-Stein has a lot of volatility in his potential offers, but I don't see him being like a $15 or $20 million a year guy in most circumstances. Maybe Vlade gives it to him because I don't know how to predict
that. He actually was on my list, so it's interesting.
Yeah, so he was my last cut on this, because I chose three guys, and so he was the last one I cut.
Yeah, well, I think Cauley-Stein, with as well as the Kings have played, now I think we both expect them to regress some. I still would, if I had to pick it, I would say they're going to finish with fewer than 30 wins on the season. But if they show real progress, and you know, they certainly could finish with more than 30 wins, and you know, he's the starting center and he's considered a big part of that, and they take some steps forward defensively, the center market, we're going to talk about this a ton here, but of the teams that'll have more than the mid-level exception in cap space, I count maybe five that will need a center, and then maybe two more as question marks, one of them being Sacramento. So it seems more likely to me with Cauley-Stein that a good season, and we've seen kind of bad teams who take a step forward, be like, oh man, like we can never get anyone in free agency. Like we got to retain our own. We finally have someone good, you know, and end up maybe overpaying. So if he plays well this year, if he establishes himself as a starter, I could very easily see him just getting a solid offer, you know, for, I think he could get $15 million a year from the Kings, maybe even more than that if they feel like he is the guy there at center. I mean, part of it is going to be what his fit is with Bagley. Those two guys have not played that many minutes together so far. That's something that the Kings absolutely need to figure out. But yeah,
they also need to figure out if Bagley's a five. I mean, because if Bagley's a five, then they can't pay Willie Cauley-Stein. Or shouldn't. Sorry, shouldn't. Yes. Not can't. I can't say the Kings can't do anything. They gave Zach LaVine, granted, that contract is looking a lot better than we thought it was at the time.
Yeah, I mean,
they had Buddy Hield and Bogdanović, and why am I forgetting? I think they have a third guy. But that's a challenge there. But yeah, that's true. I don't want to necessarily write that off with Sacramento. So I'll go to the first of my three choices, and he is an exception to a couple rules, which is why I want to do him first, and that's Julius Randle. I mean, Julius Randle is an unrestricted free agent, assuming he declines his player option, but there is so much variability for me with him, because super talented guy and is in an opportunity to show what he can do in New Orleans. Also, New Orleans has all this volatility because they could create some cap space. They could also just retain the guys they have. And I could see him just somebody falling in love with, oh my God, this guy's a matchup nightmare. You know, he's better defensively than he gets credit for. He's not great, but he's better there. And that there aren't that many centers who aren't elite who can be a player dominant enough that opponents have to game plan for them. And so that gives him a selling point that a lot of these other centers do not have. And he's young enough. He's young like these restricted free agents, but he's not a restricted free agent. So teams can negotiate with him right away. They don't have to play the game of, are they going to match or are they not?
Yeah, and so many variables here. I mean, one is just his own performance, obviously. He's coming off the bench this year. He came off the bench a fair amount with the Lakers. So is he just going to get that patina of being a bench guy, or are teams going to look at him as a starter? I think if they get into the playoffs and they do some damage in the first round and he goes up against a team that switches, you know, let's say they play the Rockets or something, and he just bludgeons them on switches, that could really be a great showcase for him. Another variable as well is that New Orleans can't really pay him, right? I mean, they can only pay him 120% of what he was making this year, which is the mid-level. So, you know, he'd be making a little over $10 million next year in the first year of any contract that he signed. But New Orleans has a lot of volatility. If they end up trading AD, that probably won't happen early enough. You know, maybe they would agree on a trade around the draft, but not be able to execute it until July. And then maybe they would have the cap space to offer Randall more than that amount and bring him back potentially to start for them if they move on from AD. And you would guess that if they do move on from AD, they'll do the, oh, hey, no, we're still actually going to try and compete. And then, you know, they'll win 30 games and realize that they are going to have to rebuild. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Obviously, I mean, New Orleans, the idea that AD wouldn't leave was looking great when they were 4-0, and now they've lost five straight. So, you know, you never know where that's going to end up. And then obviously there's his own performance as well, though he is situated pretty well on this team to play well with the spacing that they have, the other threats around him, if he gets enough opportunity. So yeah, he was on my list as well. I'm going to break out someone who is a little less well-known, although listeners to this podcast know him well. That's Maxi Kleber. He, to me, may not get $10 million, in part because he's a restricted free agent. He'll be Arenas limited, in fact. So him getting $10 million seems very unlikely. But considering he's making the minimum, I've made an exception here. He's, you know, he can play the four or the five, make shots, switch, block shots, even can attack off a closeout in a straight line, finish around the rim. And really, you know, he's not necessarily absolutely elite at any of those things. But that level of versatility and lack of weaknesses, I think, is huge. And he is someone that I absolutely would be targeting. His cap hold will be very small. He probably won't make the starter criteria this year. So, you know, his qualifying offer will be $200,000 more than the minimum, most likely. So Dallas, who once has a ton of cap space, if Barnes opts out, and even if he doesn't, they'll be at like $50 million, could just kind of re-sign him and bring him back. It would make sense for them to do that, especially because they don't have another center under contract for next year right now. We'll see where they want to send their money. But, you know, Kleber, to me, he could play well enough that I would feel fine going into him next year as the starting center. And especially with his small cap hold, then you can use that space. You know, they still would have Dwight Powell as well. Have that be your center rotation and then use that space elsewhere. But if he doesn't play that well, or they just don't see him as a center, or they still think he's a backup or whatever, then, you know, maybe he's not going to be the main guy in their plan. So if he can play well enough that they come to an agreement with him early and say, hey, we really would love to use your small cap hold, so let's agree on this, we'll do all of our other free agent stuff, and then we'll sign you to $8 million a year or $10 million a year, that would be fantastic for him. I just hope he gets enough of an opportunity. And Dirk coming back probably isn't great for him. You know, he may not play as much then. And DeAndre Jordan, you know, there's talk that he could come back too, but so much depends too. I mean, I think the better the Mavs play this season as a team, it's almost worse for him in some ways, because then they're more likely to just bring back Jordan, which would obviously not be good for him.
Kleber is a really inspiring pick. As a point of reference, he will turn 27. He will turn 27 during this season. So a guy, we talked about this actually in this most recent Stitcher Premium podcast about rules that we would change, and those players, older restricted for agents, having to deal with that process is really unfair. Yeah. I vehemently disagree with that. We talked about this with Taya Dosich a lot last year, but they're not fixing it right now, so it doesn't really matter. I didn't have Cleve on my list, but that's a really good choice. I am happy you had him in this discussion. My next one is Terry Rozier, and Rozier makes this list because of the threshold that exists for point guards. Because if you want, because Boston, you know, they might be less willing to match on him or whatever, depending on what happens with Kyrie. Like if Kyrie has a really good season, stays healthy and then resigns, then you don't maybe need to use as many resources on Terry Rozier. But as a restricted free agent, as a potential starter restricted free agent, the idea is often, and I mean, Chandler Parsons is a good example of this. Jeremy Lin is a good example of this. You need to be willing to bid enough that you're confident that the other team will at least make a really hard, have a really hard decision to make. And because otherwise it's just kind of, you know, you're kind of wasting your cap space for a while, all that kind of stuff. Because Rozier on the high end is way more than any exception. exception. That's a he's a cap space guy straight out. Maybe a sign and trade if the situation presents itself. And if he doesn't meet that threshold, it gets a lot harder for him to get his money, because then, you know, maybe you're talking about teams for the mid-level, maybe you're talking equivalent mid-level money or a little bit more than that. And, you know, Phoenix spending the money that they did by extending Devin Booker and all that, that took out one team that made a lot of sense. They could still do it by sign and trade, but that gets a little bit weird. And so I think there's a lot of volatility with him. I originally didn't have him on the list.
What was that?
Oh, that was my phone going off. But then I realized that there is more downside risk for him, so I wanted to include him in my three. He's not as, his risks aren't as severe as everybody else, but they are still there.
Yeah, I agree with you, and we've said before the possibility that his star will have peaked in terms of league-wide value during last year's playoffs, and I think he has not had the greatest start to the season. I think he's been pressing to put up numbers to some degree. He's not going to be closing games for Boston in all likelihood. You know, that's been Marcus Smart or Marcus Morris when they don't go to their five starters. He's probably, you know, third in line among their bench guys to close games because they got Kyrie already. What do they need him out there for? And you know, maybe there's some hope for him that Kyrie would miss some time and then he could get back to playing starting point guard with them, but it seems like Kyrie is doing okay so far here, so maybe that's less likely. And I mean, I think he really, the biggest thing that's a variable for him too is a potential trade, but it seems like Boston really wants to hold on to him. So that's, you know, when he gets traded, that's when you know your gold is a restricted free agent, generally, at least if the other team's given up enough to sign you, because now they've invested and they've got these sunk costs and they're going to pay you. They obviously made the decision with that in mind that they're gonna have to pay. Last one on my list here, and then we can move to some of the other categories. Kelly Oubre, another guy who,
interesting,
he's, especially because the Wizards like can't really pay him unless they make some moves. You know, it just doesn't make sense for them to invest eight figures in him when you have Otto Porter in theory at his position. They're taxed out, they're not that good, you know, so a lot of it too depends on how well they play. He's another guy where in some ways it might even be better if they don't play as well, because then maybe they move Porter and try to sign him as a cheaper replacement. I mean, now it would be nice if he could get into the starting lineup, play with Porter, you know, they make it to the second round, you know, that would probably be the best option, but that's looking pretty unlikely. So, or it might be better too if they're playing poorly, that he could even be a part of a trade to a team that can afford to pay him. His offense is looking better, but he's been pretty thirsty. He's been dogged by some rumors that he's maybe playing a little bit selfishly. Liam talked a lot about how his defense has not looked good so far in the early season on yesterday's show, but I mean, he's certainly someone who deserves credit for making incremental gains in his skill level every year and has a ton of defensive potential with that 7'2 wingspan and pretty quick feet. He's probably better actually on smaller players out on the floor, because he hasn't really gotten a ton stronger. But, you know, he's someone who, if the line with guys on the wing who are not like big ball handlers is so thin, really, between, you know, you got to hit your threes and you got to defend. And those are two things which can be inconsistent and are really hard to evaluate. And, you know, if you go from hitting 35% of your shots to 30, it's like now you're not a starting level player. If you hit 37%, now it's like you're really good. And it's just, it's based on, there's a lot of variability there. So if he can continue to hit shots, if the Wizards can turn around to some degree, you know, they can play better when he's on the floor. You know, he still has, as a relatively young player, a lot of upside to be a starting level of guy. But, you know, if he can start to show that he's close to that level and could maybe take another step forward, as opposed to just, you know, kind of being a bench guy, he could make himself a lot of money here.
My top choice, and I didn't always pick a single one, but my top choice in this bracket is D'Angelo Russell. And D'Angelo Russell is the top of this list, not necessarily because of how I feel about him, because I mean, he certainly can change my opinion, but I feel it. It's that I estimate that there is a lot of volatility in terms of how other general managers feel about him, and also the massive uncertainty in Brooklyn, because they have some cap space. They're gonna have a lot more if they withdraw his qualifying offer, and also he's a guy with a massive, massive line between the size of his qualifying offer and his cap hold. So theoretically, there's some situations there that could be of importance. And Russell is more volatile to me than Terry Rozier, just because he's proven it less, and I mean, he hasn't gotten gotten the opportunity to do that in the playoffs. Also, he is probably not the best point guard on his own team right now. And that's a challenge. Maybe Kenny Atkinson decides, I want to go with Spencer Dinwiddie more. I think he's a better, he gives us a better chance to win. And especially if Brooklyn is thinking we want to use our cap space and all that. I mean, Dinwiddie at the minimum, at a minimum cap holder close to it, is going to be a lot more pliable that they can use than D'Angelo Russell, where you basically have to choose, are we going to have D'Angelo Russell or are we not? So I could see him making, you know, backup money. I could see him making solid starter money if he has a good year. And players with high draft pedigrees often get a lot more latitude, especially over the first 3 years of their contract, because then somebody goes, oh, well, this is why he was drafted so high. This is why he's a talented player. And so I could see that. And there are teams that are looking for point guard help. So I think he's the most volatile. But we can move
to
the
I wanted to react to that just for a second.
Sure.
He did not make my list because I don't see him being that volatile, because I just don't see the path to him really improving that much. And also because there are just so many other options on the point guard market of really any flavor. You know, Rozier as a restricted free agent is probably ahead of him. You know, Dinwiddie as a younger guy is kind of ahead of him. Now he's a little bit younger than some of those guys. And then also you just have some older guys too who are in the mix, and just a lot on the point guard market. And so I don't see him playing well enough to make a team say, I'm going to really invest in you at starter money over a 3 or 4 year contract. I mean, I see it being, you know, more of a make good, maybe on a bad team. Maybe he gets brought back to the Nets at not that much money, you know, kind of more along the lines of like I don't see him making more than like, you know, $12 million a year on a shorter term deal. I think it'd be really hard for him to break out of that box. But yeah, I mean, maybe some team will see a lot in him, but I'm just not sure about that, especially with his defensive issues, his trouble getting to the rim. I mean, we've been waiting for a ton of development for him. And then there's also always the issue that he could have some health problems. But did you want to transition or you want to react to that?
No, I'm fine with that. I just think that you and I feel differently about this than James do.
Yeah.
It's me predicting the market.
Yeah, and you, maybe that's right. I mean, I probably am guilty of not seeing things through the way GMs would see it. But with him, I'm just, you know, especially because of like some of the character stuff with him too, I think that's like a way for GMs to kind of be lower on him. Let's talk about some of the guys in the middle of their career. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, the obvious one. I assume he was like number one on your list.
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, unbelievably talented player. I mean, he's flawed. We've talked about his flaws a lot in the history of Dunked On. But, I mean, Achilles injuries are one of the few that still absolutely scare not only us, but everybody. And so how he looks, also how he fits in on a very successful team. You know, does he buy in defensively? Does he actually get back in transition? Can he handle a more variable workload? I think teams are going to learn a lot about Cousins this year. Physically is the most important part, but then how he fits in. And center is such a stocked position that there is a lot more volatility. And also teams, I'm guessing, my instinct is that teams are going to be less willing to really spend on centers. I mean, we saw, granted, there was different kind of leverage in the Yusuf Nurkic case, and then there was the weird thing about Nurkic and DeMarcus Cousins sharing an agent. But I think we're getting a better sense that teams, they have to be bowled over to pay for a center. And DeMarcus Cousins absolutely has the talent to do that, but he might not.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to just think of like what he would have to do. I mean, I don't see any way he could do enough to just get a max contract. I mean, maybe like it would probably take.
Yeah, that would be really rich.
It would probably take an injury for one of the Warriors' main players where they really started to play him, you know, more than 25 minutes a game and really go through him a ton. I mean, because really, like, you know, he's probably going to suck on defense coming back from the injury, but that, you know, that's not where his bread was buttered. But I don't think he's going to be able to like put up enough points over a large enough period of time and, you know, be efficient with it. Like, he's just not going to quite have that opportunity, I don't think. And so now you could see a team going with, okay, we'll pay you, you know, 20 million, you know, kind of more of a Jabari Parker type of contract, you know, 20, 25 million for a year or two. And, you know, we'll see if we can bring you back. Maybe I think that would be an interesting structure of, hey, you know what, maybe we can decline the team option and bring you back for a longer term deal if it looks like you're really killing it here in your first year with us. But at 27, it's hard for me to see how a team is going to go, hey, 4 years, big money, based on what he can show in the second half of this year. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe he'll just have more of a chance, or there'll be games when guys sit out, or there'll be an injury. But, you know, I mean, at his peak last year, he was, you know, one of the highest usage big men that we've ever seen. And I don't know how he can prove that he's back to where he was in New Orleans with this group around him. And then, of course, you know, there's the fact that he'll be is coming back from the Achilles, and you know, first year after the Achilles is probably not going to look amazing anyway. So and that he just could never may just never be the same guy. So you know, there is a lot of volatility, because you know, I mean, maybe he just doesn't even get starter money for next year, although I'd have to imagine someone would do that just to take a chance on him getting better for the production that you could get. But I'm not actually sure that the upside is that high for him after this year. I mean, I think it really would take a full very good year in more of a featured role next year. So I could very easily see him on another short-term deal after this season.
And like you said, I could see that decision becoming a mistake if he, because you're reaching the point where we kind of know what he is. And also remember, a lot more teams have cap space this year than will next year, because teams are going to spend recklessly in 2019, which means that there will not be as much money left in 2020.
2020, there's a lot of guys coming off the books. I think there's going to be a fair amount of money in 2020, although we should
we'll
probably
see.
Look at that more rigorously at some point here.
Yeah, I've looked at it a little bit already, but not a ton. So the first guy that I want to talk about in this group, other than DeMarcus, who's an obvious pick for it in the top of the list, is Harrison Barnes. Barnes has a higher floor than a lot of these guys because he has a lucrative player option worth $25.1 million that if the market just isn't there, he can just pick up. And I expect that that is more money than he will get theoretically as the starting salary on the open market should he opt out. But getting 4 years or however long it is there's definitely value to that, the security of it. And Barnes will turn 27 before free agency. The Mavericks will probably be eliminated long before then, but it's during May. And Barnes, it's just kind of figuring out what he is. Like, where does he place in on a good team? Where does he place in on a bad team? And the volatility that also comes with presumably starting alongside two other ball dominant guys in Luka Doncic and Dennis Smith. So he could look really good in that role. I mean, he's done it before. Or you could just be sitting there going, well, why is he so much better? Why should we pay him so much more money than all of these other guys that are kind of fringy and, you know, would definitely help you win, but aren't going to be the centerpiece? So I think there's a lot of volatility with him, even if the player option changes the dynamics for him compared to some of these other guys.
Yeah, Tim Cato, when we did the Mavs preview, said his belief that and kind of the expectation that he's going to just opt into that. And you know, he's not having that great of a start to the year. I think just generally the focus is going to be on Doncic and Smith there. So I'm not sure that he's going to be able to play well enough to get an opt out. And maybe he'll be shooting for 2020 instead. That seems more likely these days that he's going to opt in to me. Although there could also be the, hey, opt out and we'll sign you to something longer term. Couple of wings I wanted to focus on here. Al-Farouq Aminu is one. He will be 28 after this season. And like so many, his value waxes and wanes with how he shot the ball. He's had really valuable seasons when he shot the ball well, less valuable seasons when he hasn't. You know, he's still not a natural shooter. It doesn't seem like he's going to take the step to be, all right, this guy's really a knockdown guy. We can't leave him anymore. But he's very valuable defensively. And so the question is, you know, is a team going to invest in him at starter money using their cap space, or is he going to fall more into the exception type of range, thinking of him more as like kind of a combo forward off the bench sort of player? And then like with so many of these guys, it's really the years as well, right? Is it going to be 2 years for him? I would feel totally good about paying, you know, $15 million a year for 2 years for him. 4 years, you know, not great. I mean, and we'll see how he shoots the ball this year and how he plays too. But, you know, as of right now, and then James Ennis is another one. Obviously, I mean, he's been, you know, was available for a 1+1 at the minimum for a reason. But, you know, I still think that he can be outstanding in this Rocket system. And, you know, if the Rockets get to where they want to be, he's going to be playing big, big minutes for this team, barring, you know, perhaps a Jimmy Butler trade. But he's really their only 3-and-D type of guy on the wing right now. You know, he's gonna have 35 minutes a game in the playoffs for a very good team. And if he can perform at a solid level, you know, he could be a guy who's gonna be kind of more in the $10 million a year range if he can play that well. And Ennis at age 29, you know, this is his one chance really to get a decent contract. Even if he can get up to eight figures for a couple of years, would be so massive for his career earnings.
I like both those picks. My two have a couple things in common. They're both listed at 6'10". They're both going to turn 28 before their next season starts. And that's about all they have in common because it's Derek Favors and Nikola Mirotic. And those two guys kind of, they define different elements of the positional revolution that's going on. Favors is just, what is he? You know, is he a center? Is he a four? What does Utah do? And then Mirotic is in the middle of this uncertainty with New Orleans. And also just how much do teams value what he does? If he has a really strong year, I could imagine him getting a ton of money. And if he has a shaky year, then maybe somebody brings him in at a reasonable sum and all that. So I just think those guys have more downside and upside than a lot of these guys. That's why I included them.
Favors, I would say, doesn't have any upside because if he plays really well, Utah is just going to bring him back next year on that non-guarantee.
They might go in a different direction, though, depending on what they're looking for.
Yeah, it seems like there are so many other teams that are really trying to use cap space. Utah may be an underrated one there. But we'll see. I mean, he is due to make $16.9 million next year. That is a very interesting number. But you would imagine if Utah is going to cut him off of that, and also his guarantee date is a little bit later as well, that could hurt him. His guarantee date is July 6th. So if he doesn't play well enough to be worth that on a one-year deal, you know, you imagine that he's going to kind of be out in the wilderness, like not even necessarily getting starting center money. So I think a lot of it is just, does he play well enough for Utah to pick that up or not? Because I think he's looking kind of as more of a backup if they don't, unless they just have some other amazing free agent that they're going to bring in. But that has not been the MO for the Jazz.
Unless there's somebody else you want to mention, we can move on to the vets. And I don't think we need to spend as much time on them because they're pretty self-evident. And so I want to start with DeAndre Jordan. With him, there's a lot of volatility in terms of years, and then there's also some in terms of salary per year. And as a point of reference, DeAndre turns 31 during next offseason, so that's around when things start getting sticky for centers. Dallas, we don't know what they're going to be, and a lot of the other teams, so I think there's a lot of volatility with him.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the... what you want to do as a veteran in this situation, if you're, and even some guys in their late 20s fall into this category, but certainly once you turn 30, is you have to play so well that you can get teams to just pay you on a longer term deal, knowing that the end of that deal is probably going to be a bad contract, but it's just so worth it to get you at the start of it that you can force them to. Danny Green is certainly in that category, depending on where the Raptors end up. I mean, if they, and he's been awesome so far to start the season, he'll be 32 next offseason. You know, if the Raps make it to the NBA finals, if Kawhi comes back, I mean, that's the other thing too. Like, if Kawhi doesn't come back, then they probably don't bring back Green as well, right? They're just going with more of a youth movement. If Kawhi comes back, then they won't have a way to replace Green, and they could pay him a fair amount of money. But, you know, if he has a good year regardless, he should be in demand. I second what you said about DeAndre Jordan. Thaddeus Young is another interesting one. Opted into about $13 million this season. He will be 31, still a very good defensive player. His offense is a little dicey. So can he convince somebody that he is a starter and deserves that type of money, or is he going to be down in the exception kind of range?
I like Thaddeus Young, and another one of mine is similar, which is Paul Millsap. Millsap is older. He turns 34 during this season, and he has that team option for next year, which I expect Denver to decline whether they bring him back or not. But I mean, depending on what kind of season Denver has, their willingness to pay Paul Millsap or somebody else to fill Paul Millsap's role will be compelling. And then the last guy I want to mention is on the same team, and that is Isaiah Thomas. We just don't know what he is. Like, if Isaiah Thomas can, I didn't have him in like the front of this line just because I don't know that a team is going to give him a lot of money, even if he's awesome, because of all the risk involved. But I mean, within the point guard market, he is incredibly volatile because he's played at an incredible level before, but he just took the minimum and isn't back yet probably for at least another month.
Yeah, I didn't include him just because I fear that his destiny is written as just someone who's going to be a bench guy, you know, make a few million a year type of thing, especially with his health issues, with his volatility in the locker room, the fact he's going to be 30, how small he is. I mean, it's just, it really pains me given the levels that he reached only 2 years ago, that, you know, the most he's ever going to have made in his career in a season is like $7 million. Deserved to make a lot more than that, and he really just, you know, got very, very unlucky with how things turned out. All right, anything we got to talk about before we go here?
No, I think we're good.
All right, we'll be back with a gamer on Tuesday night. Looking forward to that. Talk to you all then.